And when you come to the podium, if you give us your name and address, and I'm assuming they will be lined up one after the other to go to the podium and speak.
And shall we reserve questions, Mr. President, for after everybody is finished?
I think you should.
I would think that'd be appropriate, yes.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Do you have questions for either one of my experts?
We can come back. We'll come back for the sake of time. We'll come back to them. I've got my questions written down.
Well, good evening, Mrs. Deaver and Ms. Griffith and gentlemen. My name is Rich Holtkamp, and I reside at Painter's Mill with my wife, Jean. And we've lived there for 9 years, and we've been Sussex County homeowners for a total of 15 years. So we're very happy residents of Lower Delaware. Before I really get going, I'd like to hand out our exhibit books, Mr. Lang, if I may.
Not a problem.
Thank you. Our exhibit books are really highlights and true PowerPoint presentations of what's to follow. We took a different tack this time from the commission hearing when we had 300 pages. This is a brief overview of our specific presentations. I am a member and topic leader of the Overbrook Town Center Coalition, and we'll be introducing our coalition team and presenting one of our key topic areas, public concerns. My wife and I are also here as private citizens and property owners, adding our individual voices to the rezoning and development concerns, which are to follow. Just to show you where we live, since we have such good graphics here. That's one. This is the site, and this is Painter's Mill. And this is our street right here. So I think you can understand our sensitivity to this proposal. And there's many folks in the audience tonight from Painter's Mill who are here to share and voice their opinions as well. So we couldn't be any closer to this particular site. Now, before I continue, and with your indulgence, I would like to recognize the recent and sudden and tragic passing of two of our outstanding coalition leaders. Charlie Lee, who resided in Red Fox Run, who passed away 6 weeks ago.
Nice man.
And Gary Norris, a Delaware certified city planner who resided in Painter's Mill, and he passed away just 11 days ago. Both men were very gifted, tireless with their time and talent in making our coalition a knowledgeable and effective team. They will be sorely missed by their families, friends, neighbors, and teammates. We are dedicating our current and future efforts in their memory. The ultimate tribute we can make for them would be to help achieve a no vote on these rezoning and development applications. Now, we want to thank the council for this opportunity to present our mission and express our concerns, questions, and opinions about, first, the application for rezoning of the identified site from AR1 to CR1, and two, the currently planned construction of the Overbrook Town Center, which we feel is a misnomer at best. Our initial coalition was formed in January of this year, and our mission was twofold. The first, to maintain that we are not in opposition to local development. We support development that is comprehensive, executed in a thorough and timely manner, and equally important, development that is rational in character with the local area. We are not alone in calling for a proactive and better than just satisfactory infrastructure, along with the necessary increases in public safety resources. All of us should be concerned and work towards preserving and enhancing the beauty and attractiveness of our coastal region while maintaining our public health and welfare. The second item was to thoroughly investigate, learn, and understand the many aspects of land use planning and development. This included as many of the laws, regulations, and guidelines on the state and county level as possible, and to communicate with those agencies to learn their processes, challenges, and interrelationships. Our goal was to communicate accurately and in a timely manner to interested residents the complex variables and realities of how decisions are made and their impact on our individual and collective lifestyles. Now, I would like to add here that our coalition, from the beginning of our efforts to this point, have been very well received by every agency and individual we contacted and have with whom we have met. Their cooperation and willingness has been terrific and gratifying towards answering our numerous questions, helping us to learn and understand, and our thanks and appreciation goes out to all of them. Now to my key topic area, public concerns. This is what we've heard. We have heard that land use decisions are made on the basis of what's good for the county. This surely has to be the final conclusion reached by the P&Z Commission and you, the County Council. This reasoning appears simple on the surface, but on reality, what's good for Sussex County is a complex equation with many critical factors, partial, impartial, reality, and speculation, all having many owners, associates, and critics. What seems apparent to many of the area residents is that what's good for Sussex County is being decided by a minority, composed mostly of landowners, developers, their legal representatives, public officials and administrators, and retailers. Among others, however, the public majority must also have a voice. They want to go from feeling like victims to partners in land use decisions. All of us together are the county. We should all be challenged to slow down and consider what's already happening to our coastal area. Are we not responsible enough to consider the wider, long-term impact of site-specific land use decisions? Our Sussex County way of life is becoming more and more in jeopardy. Further on what we've heard, the wide view. The public's desire and demand for more comprehensive land use planning and implementation. The need for well-conceived, proactive infrastructure improvements. The necessity for appropriate increases in public service resources, protection and preservation of our environmental spaces, natural resources, ecosystems, wildlife habitat, our farms and open spaces, appropriate maintenance of the in-character nature of the local area. The narrow view. Does an 850,000 square foot shopping center fit within the present character of the local area, which on the east side of Route 1 are in adjacent proximity, are nothing but working farms with one large parcel in conservancy? Is there really a need for more retail stores to service the entire coastal area? None have been identified, and even if several stores would be desirable, there are plenty of currently available commercially zoned sites to accommodate those. We don't require a massive new center with 22 available sites. We cannot support every conceivable retail store in our backyard. How will public safety resources be impacted? How many more minutes will it take for a state trooper, fire department, our first aid EMTs, to arrive at an emergency site? This can be a matter of life or death, as I just referenced. Are we all not witnesses to an ever-increasing traffic flow leading to congestion, if not full gridlock, extending even further north, south, and west on all of our major and secondary roads? How will our home values be affected? Living within close proximity to this massive shopping center with the required new overpass and access roads, along with the noise, night lights, etc., will not enhance the largest investment that most of us have. Now, Mr. Hudson previously predicted that home values will increase. I would like to add to that and say that, yes, new home values are increasing. I've talked to several realtors and I've inquired into this, and every year with the demand and the sales of new houses, the prices are going up. But take a look at resale values. Those home values are not going up, and they have gone down and are stagnant at best. So I would challenge that comment about how our home values are going to increase with this shopping center. Finally, what about the tax burden on the taxpayers? Surely all of these roads and public services, including water, sewerage, and utilities, along with the corresponding need for increases in emergency personnel, training, and equipment, along with the maintenance issues involved, will cost us more. Our coalition has documented 1,600 letters, petitions, emails in opposition to this application. Hits on our website now exceed 6,200 since February. The majority of our local population would not only be surprised but very gratified that every concern just listed is covered by mandatory regulations of Delaware Code, Title IX, Section 6904. I think I will spare everybody the recitation of that particular regulation, because I think Mr. Witzel has already done that very appropriately. You got me on that. Good.
Everybody in this room thanks you.
It took me a half an hour to get that documented, and now it's off to the side. We sometimes hear that development is inevitable and can't be stopped, that roadways and infrastructure will never be adequate. If this is really true, then what also will be evident will be chaos and frustration. What will happen to our once attractive area and enjoyable lifestyle? In fact, we don't have to wait. We are seeing it now. Does this sound like short-term resident whining? Just ask those who were born and raised here, with perhaps generations of local family history. They are as frustrated and concerned about the current situation as anybody, long or short term. Consider also that many current residents in the coastal region have moved here from locations where for decades unmanaged, uncoordinated, single-site development took place. The inevitable result was just what we're experiencing today, with disheartening predictions for our area tomorrow. We are enduring a repeat of our past experience. Our concerns are justified. We know what we're talking about. We are asking you today to make decisions that preserve and enhance our regional and professional, personal lifestyles before it is way too late. There will be no turning back. To quote Abraham Lincoln, in this, public sentiment is everything. With public sentiment, nothing can fail. Without it, nothing can succeed. In our present time, we hope this very insightful sentiment is still valid. What follows me right now is consumer and economic needs, public safety risks, traffic concerns, environmental risks, and a summary. I want to thank you for your attention, and when it's time to vote, we respectfully ask you, our County Council for a majority no vote on this application. I would like to introduce Rusty Kruglak, who will speak on the consumer and economic needs topic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Rusty Kruglak. I live in Milton. I'm also a member of the OTCC. I'm the director of the Outreach Program and the Economic Impact Committee. As the Outreach Director, I spearheaded the petition drive. In doing so, I met and spoke with hundreds of residents from many communities that will be affected by the OTC, as well as leaders of various groups and organizations, including town councils and chambers of commerce. This gave me a true sense of people's reaction to this proposal. The question that I asked all of them was, is this good for the residents of Sussex County? The answer from all the people I polled, with the exception of two and elected officials who would not comment, was no, they don't want it. On April 23rd of this year, the Planning and Zoning Commission had a meeting in this very same room. It was so crowded, people were standing outside. After the applicant finished his presentation, the chairman asked if there was anyone in the audience who would like to speak in favor of the applicant. Not one person raised a hand. Not one person came up to this podium. Now, let me be clear about this. The residents of Sussex County are not against development, but they want balanced development. The OTC is a massive project that does not fit in with the character of the area and will have significant negative effects in terms of traffic, safety, and the environment. As clear as the feelings of the residents of Sussex County are, the developer is not so clear. He has stated that the shopping center should be built because, and I quote, Sussex County is underserved by the lack of traditional retail shopping facilities. Yet on the other hand, he has also said, and I quote again, I'm telling you that it is in the growth area. It's not relevant whether someone thinks it should be or not. So is his priority to serve the best interests of the residents of the county or his own? Now, I realize and respect that the council cannot make a decision based on public opinion. But doesn't Title IX, Subchapter 2, the Quality of Life Act, support what the public is saying? It specifically says, and I quote, that the intent of this subchapter is to encourage the most appropriate use of land, water, and resources consistent with the public interest, and to deal effectively with future problems that may result from the use and development of land within their jurisdictions. Through the process of comprehensive planning, it is intended that units of county government can preserve, promote, and improve the public health, safety, comfort, good order, appearance, convenience, law enforcement, and fire prevention and general welfare, facilitate the adequate and efficient provision of transportation, water, sewage, schools, parks, recreational facilities, housings, and other requirements and services, and conserve, develop, utilize, and protect natural resources within their jurisdictions. Well, as you've heard and as you'll continue to see, the OTC is going to cause major traffic jams, hinder the response time of law enforcement, first responders, and firefighters, and pose a major threat to the environment, specifically the Great Marsh. How is that improving the safety and health of the residents of Sussex County? Now let me put on my economic development hat and share the facts regarding the so-called economic benefit of the OTC. And I would like to tell the council up front that everything you are about to hear is fact and easily checked for accuracy. This is the latest site plan for the OTC that we've seen so far. The developer has claimed again that the area is underserved by the lack of traditional retail shopping facilities. Well, what does he consider a traditional retail facility? Where's the data supporting that? I haven't seen anything, and I haven't seen anything in the file to the council either. The OTC is larger than all three Tanger outlets combined. As you can see, it's been designed to attract large national retailers. The current design shows a total of only 22 retail spaces, with only six under 30,000 square feet. A shopping center three times the size of all the Tanger outlets combined and only 22 stores? Obviously, this shopping center is being built to house large box stores. Now, many of the people that I spoke to have told me if they build a shopping center, they're hoping for a Target or a Kohl's to locate down here, maybe a Whole Foods or a Wegmans. But these stores are likely not coming. The developer has claimed that, and I quote, "In fact, there have been several proposed developments submitted to the county for approval that included national anchors such as Target and Kohl's, but they were unsuccessful in their efforts to gain approval." Why were the efforts unsuccessful? Did you turn them down? Or could it be that we just don't have the demographics to attract large retailers? Let me share some additional facts with you. Whole Foods requires 200,000 people within a 20-minute drive and prefers a standalone facility. In the May 9th edition of the Washington Post, Whole Foods announced they are opening a new store in Tysons Corner, Virginia. This new store will be smaller than existing stores, the emphasis will be on lower-priced goods, and the marketing will be geared towards millennials. I don't think anybody in this room qualifies as a millennial.
Maybe that guy.
Maybe.
Let the record be known that, yes, perhaps I am.
Okay. We'll discuss that later. Wegmans has no plans for opening a store in Delaware. Not now, not in the next 5 years. How about a Cabela's? Hunting and fishing are major recreational pursuits in Sussex County. No, they're not coming either. They mandate that there'll be 200,000 people within 30 miles, require 5 to 13 acres, have at least 75,000 cars per day in the area, and not be near any franchise or outlet stores. Target, everybody's first choice for a store down here, has the following requirements: a median age of 41, a median income of $63,000, 45% of families with children at home, and 48% of the residents will have college degrees. Now, how does Sussex County stack up against these numbers? Well, according to the latest census, 64% of the residents are either over 65 or under 18. 20% have a college degree, and the median income is currently $52,000. Target is actually closing stores down, including all of their stores in Canada. According to Forbes, Target has made smaller stores a big priority, about 20,000 square feet, and they're locating them in urban areas. The new stores will be called Target Express. The total population of Sussex County is 210,000, about 210 people per square mile. We just don't have the demographics that's going to bring the large retailers in. Now, since the OTC is designed for box stores, what's the future of box stores? Goldman Sachs predicts a decline for Target and Walmart and says superstores are struggling. Big box stores are losing market to dollar stores. Notice how many are opening in our area. And they're closing down more stores than they're opening. Speaking of closing stores, over the last 10 years, JCPenney has closed 33 stores. Sears has closed over 300. Macy's has closed 5 of their large department stores. And in a May 6 article in the Washington Post reported that Macy's is opening a few smaller stores that will offer discounted goods similar to the Nordstrom Rack. So much for high-end retailers. Even Walmart, in a May 15th article in the Post, admitted that smaller stores are the key to growth. And what about online shopping? Well, the Huffington Report states that Walmart, the world's largest retailer, showed sales for August and through October as follows. Large stores showed a 0.5% increase in sales. Smaller stores, 5.5%. Online purchases, 22%. In the May 15th business section of the Washington Post, Walmart let it be known that it is initiating a program to give free shipping on all orders for a flat fee of $49, obviously to compete with Amazon. Again, according to Forbes, in the past holiday season, 34% of customers did more than 50% of their shopping online. They continue to say, and I quote, "The fixed cost of real estate combined with inventory have all been disrupted by online shopping growth. This will continue to force many retailers to re-engineer their business," end quote. Online shopping is growing exponentially and will have a continued negative effect on brick-and-mortar stores. On May 19th of this year, CBS Morning News did a report on online shopping and said, I quote, "Online competition is eating the lunch of traditional retailers," end quote. They go on to report, as I just said, that major retailers are opening smaller stores in urban areas. The developer also states that our area is underserved because of the growing population base, with an influx of new residents from the neighboring states of Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York. What he is not telling you is that the majority of these new residents are retirees on fixed incomes. The U.S. Department of Labor states that individuals 65 and older spend 41% less than those aged 35 to 64, and also had the lowest income before taxes. What are they spending their money on? Not shopping, healthcare. Oh, and the massive influx of new residents? Between 4 and 7% annually, depending on whose report you read. The developers also claim that Dewey Beach, the Nassau Bridge, is just fully developed. Well, then how do you explain this? Route 1, Route 1, Route 24, but 300 yards off of Route 1, so technically I included it into this. Brand new building, just south of Five Points. Occupancy rate, zero. Again, the developer has maintained that, and I quote again, "We are underserved by traditional shopping facilities," end quote. Then why are there 31 shopping centers in Sussex County, each having one or more vacancies? Painter's Mill, which is right across the street from the proposed OTC, has a vacancy rate of 50%, and two of the retail locations there have never been occupied since their development was built in 04. Five Points, built as a true town center, has a vacancy rate of almost 20%. The Rehoboth Mall, surrounded by four national retailers, Walmart, Tuesday Morning, Peoples, Michaels, and a Rite Aid. And yet the mall is virtually deserted, as you can see by this picture right here. The current tenants, a Radio Shack, which is vacating before the year is out, a hairdresser, and a tailor.
The tailor's leaving?
Is she leaving too? No.
I don't know. I'm one of the 41% that spends less on shopping, so I can't
tell. He's very good.
Is the shoe guy already gone?
The guy's gone.
I haven't been there in a while. I don't know.
She's good. Sula is earning it.
That's right. That's right. Off, sorry
off,
to interrupt.
Off record, the only people that utilize the mall are early morning walkers.
Sorry.
Thousands of square feet of retail space in the heart of the Route 1 commercial corridor available. And yet we're being told we don't have enough retail space. We need an established shopping center. There are currently 159 properties available for lease in Sussex County. And what is the current business philosophy in regard to building large malls or shopping centers? Green Street Advisors, a real estate analytics firm, stated 15% of current malls will fail or be converted to non-retail space within the next 10 years. 2 years ago, the estimate was 10%. In March 2014, in an article in the New Yorker magazine by Amy Merrick, The Gap, a national retailer, is no longer counting on malls for growth. According to Glenn Murphy, GATT's CEO, and I quote, "Culturally, the business pivoted towards digital. Mall traffic for a number of years has been slowing down. Whether it continues to decline over time, I think that's realistic to assume," end quote. There's even a website called deadmalls.com devoted to vacant malls across the country, and you'll find the Blue Hen Mall in there as well. Now, some of you might be thinking, wait a minute, Ross, what about Christiana Mall? Well, what about it? You can't compare Christiana to OTC, but for the sake of argument, let's do exactly that. The Christiana Mall is 25% larger than OTC, yet it has 150 restaurants and stores compared to 22 for OTC. And Christiana also has 50,000 square feet devoted to a cinema complex. OTC, not that we know of yet. Also, Christiana is pulling from a potential customer base of millions. Philadelphia and the surrounding area, northern Delaware, New Jersey, even as far away as New York City. OTC, maybe 200,000 people or so, and that's being generous. Christiana caters to customers year-round. OTC will be dependent on the tourist trade, which is seasonal. Also, Christiana has multiple entrances and exits and is served by a major interstate. OTC, well, we're not sure yet because I think that's the sixth design in 6 weeks as far as that mall is concerned. And OTC is only served by Route 1. Now, the developer has said that OTC will attract customers from the Salisbury area. He's probably right. He's right because the mall down there is dying. Anchor tenants are leaving, and there's a discussion to demolish part of the mall and turn it into an art center. The developer also states that, and I quote again, the proposed CR1 zoning will permit a use which will have a beneficial economic impact on Sussex County through the creation of significant employment opportunities, both during construction of the facility and operation of the shopping center, as well as secondary impact, end quote. Specifically, he says that the OTC will generate 400 construction jobs. Will these be local contractors or out of state? There'll also be 1,500 new retail jobs that'll generate $53 million in annual wage compensation. Well, if you do the math, this accounts to an annual wage of $35,700 for full-time work, or $17.14 an hour. Actual retail wage in our area is around $8 an hour, and most jobs are going to be part-time and or seasonal. Total annual compensation is more likely to be an annual wage of $7,000, not $35,000. The April 14th edition of the Cape Gazette states that Delaware is the last out of all 50 states in wage growth. We're dead last. Hourly wages have actually dropped. The developer claims that minimum wage jobs are attractive for retirees looking for something to do, unemployed individuals, and young people just entering the workforce. Well, if you're unemployed or a teenager, how are you going to get to work if you don't have a car? There's no public transportation to the OTC. And if the minimum wage is so attractive, then why are so many people protesting they can't live on a minimum wage? And why is Walmart, the largest retailer in the world and not known for its generosity, raising the minimum wage of all of their employees to $1.75 over the minimum wage? And McDonald's is also raising the minimum wage they are paying their employees in their company-owned stores. On May 20th, the Washington Post reported that Los Angeles is raising a minimum wage for its employees. It'll be $10.50 by July 2016 and $15 by 2020. Other cities are following suit. Now let's talk about the consequences of this zoning application. The developer has vigorously stated that legally, CR1 zoning is applicable. We disagree and will continue to prove that today. What he has not said is that once he gets a zoning change from agriculture to commercial, he does not have to build a mall, but can build almost anything he wants within the guidelines of county regulations. This could include manufacturing facilities or industrial warehousing. Now legally, he's not obligated to share that information. But in the spirit of full disclosure, why not? Until today. If a shopping center is not built, what happens to the 400 construction jobs a developer is telling us will occur? Gone. What about the 1,500 retail and service jobs? Gone. How about the millions of dollars in wages to be earned and taxed? Gone. And those secondary economic benefits he claims for Sussex County? That's right, gone. If the developer is not required to build a shopping center, then what are his real motives? So to recap, the residents of Sussex County are not against development. They want balanced development. The developer has consistently provided inaccurate information to the council and the public and has exaggerated the financial benefits as well. We've been told the shopping center will attract major retailers. Likely not. We are told that we are underserved by retailers and do not have shopping centers with traditional retail stores. Yet there are many vacancies and open parcels of land that can be utilized in the current Route 1 corridor. We've been told that the Route 1 corridor is fully developed and we have to move north of Nassau Bridge, eliminate a farm, create massive traffic jams, increase the threat to public safety in terms of more accidents and delayed responses for first responders, and wreak havoc on the environment. But there are open parcels of land that can be developed and a large number of retail vacancies in the Route 1 commercial corridor now. And the developer has failed to inform the public that once zoning is approved, there may be no shopping center at all, and the positive economic impact he is touting will not exist. Teddy Roosevelt said, quote, The government is us. We are the government, you and I. The residents of Sussex County have entrusted you with a responsibility to protect us, to protect our health, safety, and welfare. On behalf of myself and all the residents of Sussex County, I ask you to do exactly that and say no to the zoning change. Thank you.
Thank you. And the next speaker.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. President.
Good evening.
Members of the council. I thought it was going to be a typo. Good evening. Here we are. My name is Mike Iris. I live in the Oyster Rock development, which is just a little less than half a mile from where the OTC is going to be built. I've lived there for just over 7 years. Very happy to be here in Delaware.
We're happy you're here, too.
I've been following the plans for the OTC since it was rumored a number of years ago. And I had concerns about how it was going to affect the area, how it was going to affect the costs of housing, how it was going to affect the quality of life, and what it was going to do to the people and the developments in the area, considering the massive size of it. It was because of those concerns that I got involved with the Overbrook Town Center Coalition. Initially with Red Fox Run and Rich Barrasso, and then subsequently with Painter's Mill. My section of the presentation is to represent the public service people, the firefighters, the police officers, state troopers, the EMS people, because they play a very specific role in this OTC. Number one is I was able to receive statistics through my state representative and found out that over the course of 2 years, the average number of accidents between the corridor of Route 16 and Route 9, that there were 93 accidents. If you take the increase in the amount of traffic that's projected by the representatives of the OTC, and DelDOT, the amount of traffic is going to double. So we can conservatively figure that the amount of accidents are going to double, which means instead of having an accident once every 3 days, we'll have an accident once every 2 days. That's a decent increase in accidents. And state troopers have to respond to those accidents. With the increase of traffic, firefighters, EMS people will have to respond to those calls for service. Firefighters have to respond first to their stations to be able to get the apparatus. In the amount of increased traffic that we have because of the OTC, what type of frustration are they going to go through to get to the stations? And once they reach the stations, what type of frustration is it going to be traveling with that piece of equipment to the scene? I know from experience the amount of frustration that you go through, having 34 years of experience in law enforcement, over 20 years of experience in volunteer service, firefighter, and 16 years of experience as a paramedic. And I've done all three of those jobs. So I know the type of frustration. And I also drove through the traffic for the Roosevelt Field Mall during Christmas time when there was traffic that you had to deal with. So besides that, I did a little bit of a study and contacted the Dover Police Department, considering that the Dover Mall was the closest thing I could get in comparison to the OTC. And the number of calls for service to the Dover Mall, and what I mean by calls for service are things like larcenies, alarms, car thefts, robberies, those type of things, were 672 calls for service. So that means that you're going to have, again, state troopers, considering that that's outside the areas, so it's not going to be the Milton Police Department or the Lewis Police Department, it's the state troopers. They're going to be responding to calls for service also to that Overbrook Town Center. That stretches the amount of calls that the state troopers are going to be responding to between the accidents and calls for service. How many more state troopers are we going to need to bring into Sussex County? And if I'm not mistaken, we pay for the amount of state troopers that are 44. How many more will we have to increase in order to cover that cost? Who's going to pay for that? Who pays for the added equipment that's going to be needed? What type of stress is going to be put on the trying to get more volunteers? It's tough getting volunteers now for the fire departments to be able to cover that. It comes down to we're going to bear the costs either through Sussex County tax or through state tax. So with that, I recommend that we turn this down, and I would recommend that the council turn it down. I appreciate your attention. Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe there was one more witness.
No, there's two more.
Two more. Okay. Thank you.
It's Bob Billman.
Leave it. What about? Yes.
It's gonna be hard to say anything about repeating in it.
Mike stole my good evening line, but I'm Bob Billmeyer, and I also live in the Oyster Rock community. I'm speaking as a local representative resident and also as a retired professional engineer. My wife and I have a personal interest in this application with concerns for the value of our house, the effects on our lifestyle and personal safety, and the disruption of the residential character of the community in which we've invested our retirement. I'm part of the OTC coalition and a topic leader within the group. I'm going to talk about traffic concerns again.
I haven't heard that before.
They've been covered.
I said we haven't heard that before.
Yeah, that's right. This is a new topic. I'm going to try to fill in the blanks between the two presentations we've already done. And my wife and I actually moved here 3 years ago as full-time residents, and we learned to deal with the traffic. That was one of the first adjustments we had to do. We used back roads and alternative routes, and we could still get most of the places we wanted to go anytime. But the traffic continued to increase, and it's reached the point where last August we had difficulty even crossing Route 1 to get into Oyster Rock on Saturdays in August. And that's not the only time that the traffic has noticeably increased. We have it on weekends, weeknights. We have it in the off season now, and it's getting to be kind of unpredictable. But we're already in the mode where we plan our days and our week around traffic. And it's reached the point where we're losing our freedom to do what we want when we want to. It's just that's the existing state of traffic here. So let's look at the numbers.
Excuse me, everybody wants to come here, that's why.
Yeah.
The last 3 years, look how many has come.
Yes, that's right.
Last 4 or 5 years.
So let's look at my handout there on page 2. We're showing the Route 1 traffic levels. And the first line showing what we had at the time of the traffic survey. And the next line is what Neil was talking about with the seasonal adjustment downward of the peak evening hours. But even at that, the traffic study from the developer shows, you know, an increase even without the OTC by 2020. But then when you add the OTC into it, we're up to some very large numbers. That 4640 for the evening peak hour, well, if you look over there for 2013, that's larger than the Saturday peak traffic that we had in 2013. So we're talking about Saturdays every day. And I don't think anybody wants to see that. And on the new Saturday peak is up to 75, 78, which it could very well pass the peak capacity of the road as it is. And I don't see any discussion in anything so far about adding lanes. So that's something I'm going to be discussing also. So the corridor capacity plan, the purpose of that is to have better volume through limited access, to have safety and efficiency. And that's dependent on the traffic getting on and off the road smoothly. And that's why you have to have good ramps, you have to have good acceleration lanes, both getting on and getting off. People have to get out of the way so the people that are on the road don't have to change speed. We've already identified that the Cape Neck overpass is not funded anytime in the near future. Now, the CCP limits development and trips in this area. And one of the key components is you have to have less than 200 trips a day, or the developer gets into a mode where he needs to pay for all the needed roadway improvements. And I think that's a key point, because the dialogue that's going on between DelDOT and the developer is a key point. It would be a shame to limit the contribution from the developer without knowing what the costs are going to be. And we don't know that. And by the way, the CCP is state law. It's Delaware Code, it's Title 17, Section 145, passed by the legislature. So the applicant's traffic study does identify intersections and roadways needing some traffic lights and things like that, but it doesn't really address capacity of Route 1 itself and what would be done to provide for that. Now, the projections, I think I already covered the future, so we'll skip down past all that. But you can see the percentages there. It's a 58% increase when we add the OTC on Saturday, and it's a 75% increase on the weekday. The weekdays actually take a bigger hit. So I feel the additional traffic violates Delaware Code 6904 about lessening congestion and reducing excess roads and such. Now, the unique thing about the site being that you only get to it from three directions, and they're all the same point. They're all right where the overpass is. So that's the other thing that's different between this and Christiana Mall. You have a large mall, but really all the traffic has to come through one spot. And that's it's very apparent in the traffic study when you start looking at the distributions. The traffic study didn't actually consider this area-wide distribution, though, that feeds into these three directions. Like going in the westward direction, they pretty much have all the traffic going down Cave Neck, and then 60% of it then goes down Sweetbriar Road. 40% goes down Cave Neck. It doesn't consider all the other roads to the west and the impact on Milton and other things. In fact, when my son comes to visit me from North Carolina, he winds up coming up Hudson Road, because when you come from the southwest direction, that's where you're going to be sent. And Hudson Road is the natural road that's going to be carrying all this traffic to the shopping center, and that's not even included in the traffic study. So that's a fallacy. And Hudson Road and Sweetbriar hit Cave Neck very close together. So you need to synchronize all that traffic. So you're getting into a much more complex situation. We've already talked about the fire police EMT. Getting that through, do all the roads have shoulders? Or is a developer putting in shoulders for the on all these different ramps, overpasses, and such? And the biggest problem, it's sort of a shared problem. We have delays in gridlock. Sure, it hurts business, it hurts the tourist trade, it hurts the OTC. I mean, what are the chances of them being successful at a location where it's very difficult to shop on Saturday? It can also hurt, though, and evenings. And it's going to hurt retiree immigration, which people may have mixed feelings about. But at any rate, those are all potential impacts.
Did you say immigration? I think I've never heard that term. Immigration.
I think a more complete study would show all the impacts and would also help to identify the costs that are actually involved here. You need to need that. I think DelDOT needs that to have an idea of what's going to be happening. And And if the roads can be made safe and efficient, then I'm all for it. And but the, you know, the appropriate funding needs to be available to do that as well. I think I've already lost myself here.
Retiree immigration, that was your last point.
It's like the Dust Bowl, you know. Okay. So, looking at that funding, a number of people mentioned what intersections cost. I'm going to throw in a few more. The one, they have some very nice looking ones north of here that are quite a bit more spread out and friendly curves and changes of elevation than this. Like one at South Frederica cost $29.4 million. Northeast Front Street, $29.1 million. The one at Route 16 coming up, $29.4 million. They're all stuck in that $29 million bracket, which might be a potentially more accurate estimate of what this is actually going to wind up costing. Okay, now I'm going to talk about the site plan a little bit. Now, the fact that this is version F should give you an idea that maybe it isn't so easy to come up with an acceptable plan that will work. And this one doesn't work either, in spite of the Delta rumblings that they're going to pass the thing. First off, roundabouts. Let's look at the Delta design manual. It says roundabouts are good for highly variable traffic patterns with lots of left turns. It's also good for traffic calming. They're only good if they're one-lane roundabouts. It's inappropriate to have a multi-lane roundabout. They're inappropriate where the grades are over 3%, where you have backups or unbalanced flows or major and minor mixing. Well, you know, one of the other things that we have to consider, everybody's looking at this two-dimensionally, but that overpass is 25 feet high. The deck of the overpass, 25 feet high, has to go down to those roundabouts on each side. And so you're going to have like 8 or 9% grades once you get off the bridge down to get to the roundabouts. So it's going to be very unusual and potentially unsafe. So I mentioned the acclimation already, and it's true. And we have tourists, we have elderly people, destination shoppers, they're not going to be familiar with this. And they're mixing with people who are local who want to hurry through there. So let's do a quick walkthrough. If you look at enclosure 4, page 4 of your handout. We're going to look at page 4 and 5. Okay. So direct your attention to the roundabout on the right side, which I've identified as the east roundabout. And I've showed on there traffic levels that are coming into it. The two numbers, there's a number which is not in italics. So we look at that one to the lower left there. It says entering OTC 648. That's 648 cars or vehicles an hour coming in on weekday nights. And then 981 is a Saturday, the one in parentheses. So that we're looking at that. And then if we look over at the handout 5, that's called the middle roundabout on here. And that's rated as a C, which is sort of the lowest acceptable level. And it has 16.7 after it. That's the number of seconds that the average wait for a vehicle entering this roundabout. So it's a two-lane roundabout at that point, I believe. So you figure two cars will be entering every 16.7 seconds. So what's that work out to in an hour? That works out to 431 cars making it through. But even on the weekday, we got 648 coming in. And on the Saturday, we got 981 coming in. So if you have 981 and only 431 can get in, you have a 550 car backup, which is 16,000 feet or 3 miles. So I would beg to differ that maybe these roundabouts don't work. That's something to consider. Also, the overpass, as a money-saving decision, the overpass has been limited to one lane in each direction. And that's going, we have two lanes coming here and there, we got two lane roundabouts, but when you get the overpass, you got a bottleneck. So you got You look at that heading west, on Saturday you got 1,219 cars trying to get over the one lane overpass. And they're going to go ahead there, then the next roundabout they're going to go three quarters of the way around it. It's this whole thing doesn't seem to work. And since this is a sixth submittal of the site plan, I'm starting to think maybe it can't be done. Maybe there's no way to make this work.
You hold on a second here. You're really getting me confused.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have one speaker before you talking about how this place is going to shut down. It can't make it economically. There's not going to be anybody there. And here you talk. They're going to be standing in line 5 miles long to try to get into the place.
Well,
so you guys got to get together on your story, because I don't know which one to believe really now.
Well, actually, I'm rooting for them to succeed, because if they don't succeed, we're going to have to,
But you got to get the story straight.
Right. We're going to have. I don't want to have Blue Hen Mall sitting up in my neighborhood. But I'm afraid we might. And the other curious thing, if you notice, in this part of the site plan, we got this curve that comes in, and it splits here, and one ramp enters here, and one ramp enters the roundabout so it can go west. Well, this is the same lane that comes up here, and now it splits. Well, this point's at ground level, and this point's at 25 feet up. I don't see how this can go 25 feet up in that space, and I don't see how physically it can be built. So there are a lot of things that show a lack of thought or whatever. I just don't know what they're attempting to do. But it certainly, I have no confidence in what we're looking at there. Now, DelDOT's been looking at this. I guess there's some other things. The pad traffic is something that has to deal with all this confusion as well, because they're entering onto the road that connects the two roundabouts in the middle. They have to somehow get in and out through this traffic. Farm vehicles. Kenny Hudson will be talking here, I think. He's got a farm behind here. Other farmers, they have to take their equipment north and south. They have been doing it on Route 1 at very off hours and stuff. Well, now they're going to have to go through these roundabouts or something to get in. In fact, Kenny has to come. His route is to come out here and down here and around this roundabout to get somewhere. That's what Kenny's been handed. So there are a lot of impacts that maybe people aren't thinking about. And DelDOT, in reviewing these plans, has actually been very easy on the developer. They've been not using standards like we're seeing at these other locations, the gradual changes of elevation, the sweeping curves, that actually allows the vehicles to slow down after they get off the road or to accelerate before they actually hit the road. They've been using sort of minimum state standards. So is it CCPP compliant? Well, it's going to have to meet all those things I'm mentioning about the acceleration, deceleration curves, the entry traffic. And since the traffic going in and out of the mall is such a huge portion of the overall traffic, it's going to be a lot different than other intersections. There needs to be a way for this traffic to merge together. And it's going to be a very high portion of the cars are getting off or getting on. And generally, when you do that sort of thing, even if you don't increase the traffic, you need to have additional lanes so this merging can happen without accidents and confusion. So because of the reduced level that's being applied to this in review comments, I think it's going to be less safe than it should be. I mean, this is one of the major volume intersections in the system, and it's being treated, like we were talking about the shopping center itself looking like a 1960s or 50s design. This interchange looks like a 1950s or 60s design. So anyway, this is a special situation. Route 1 serves so many needs. We've identified all that. You have local traffic, you got the emergency traffic, you got tourists, retirees, commuters. We have very large peaks and valleys on this road, and it's very difficult to compensate for. And it could very well present the OTC success. The state is free. According to a quotation from Mr. Witzel from the PLUS report, the state may support future growth in investment level 3, but the state has other priorities for the near future. The PLUS report supporting future growth, not near future growth. And DelDOT, I think, of the, as I said, since they're not identifying all the necessary improvements, there's sort of a misunderstanding about what the developer is going to be asked to pay for later. And if it's not the developer, it's going to be the taxpayers. So the question is, DelDOT actually asked me to ask you guys if you're going to pay for everything. So, you know, there are only so many sources. So we're sort of in a situation where we're being asked to accept some of the risk. You know, if they're not successful, we don't get those jobs that give us all those benefits. And then the other side of the risk is, you know, potential damage to the retiree immigration and all those other things I mentioned. So you have a difficult decision. You have to provide safe and adequate roadways, emergency services, and make decisions based on that. Can it be done? Version F. Can it be afforded? The zoning code section 1215 77.1A permits large-scale development where the infrastructure is existing, planned, or funded, and shall be completed prior to the issuance of a certificate of compliance. That's Exhibit 23 in Rob's book. While there's no funding, I don't see how there can be a completion or acceptance. So, in summary, the traffic study is not identifying all the costs. I don't think the added volume of traffic is possible on the existing road system. The site plan is not compliant with the mandates of the CCP. Maintaining performance and capacity is probably cost prohibitive. The site plan is not safe, not buildable, not workable. The only legal and available source of funding is the developer, but it's not a priority spending need for the state or the county. And I feel Mr. Witzel's findings of fact give you all the justification you need to deny this proposed change of zoning. Our next speaker will be Steve Britz on the environmental risk.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Steve Britz. My wife and I have owned a house in Sussex County for going on 20 years now, and I would like to make